Hey everybody, this is Tiffany Carlson. We're back with another episode of Life After Paralysis for Spinalpedia. And today we are joined by someone from New York City, which is pretty cool because I'm from Minnesota, which is very boring. So today we're talking to the cool peoples, Jeffrey Lorenzo Williams from New York
New
City.
York.
Hello. How are you? Nice to meet you.
How you doing today? Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak with you.
Oh
I'm
man, this is great.
excited about this.
I don't know how I haven't heard about you before. I've been writing and I wrote for New Ability for a long time and I've been paralyzed myself since 1993 and somehow you slipped under my radar. How is that possible?
I don't even know how that was possible. I'm actually
I
on a lot of platforms on social media. I do a lot of motivational speaking. So I really don't know how that happened, but I'm
Well,
glad that we finally met. Like they say, everything happens when it should.
yeah, I'm so glad for social media and I'm glad that we've connected. So let's start from the beginning. I think whenever I have someone on the show, I always like to start out by asking how they were injured. How did you end up, as a person with paralysis? And for you, I know it's been a while. So if you don't mind sharing, let's start from how you got injured, please. Yeah.
I was accidentally shot in 1982 by one of my friends playing with a gun in the Bronx, over in the High Bridge area of the Bronx on 165th Street and Nelson Avenue. His uncle had a gun in the house, and he was showing me the gun with me and my brother, and he accidentally shot me with the gun.
That's the scariest thing. I hear about so many kids playing with guns like that, and you're lucky you survived though. When it first happened, and did you even understand what was happening to your body? Did you understand what a paralysis was? I know I was hurt at 14, so I was a bit confused.
Yes, I mean, at 13 years old, I had no idea what paralysis was.
Right?
When you're 13 and you're kind of just running through life. And I think sometimes we move through life so fast, we don't even slow down enough to really notice that these things have always been around us. But
Yeah.
when it actually happens to you, it's when you first encounter this new reality. And it was just, I was kind of lost because I had no idea what paralysis was. I had no understanding of how the spinal cord works and the
Wow.
nerve damage and the fact that I wasn't able to use my legs.
Well, it was the 80s, so it was pre-ADA. And so what
Yeah.
was it like, going back to high school? Was it accessible for you? How did you manage?
High school was not accessible for me.
Okay.
Like you said, because it was pre-ADA, there was no bus lifts, there was no ramps. And what I was fortunate enough that a couple of my classmates and a few of my friends, one of my friends, Lamont, actually lived in my building. And he said that he would take me to school. So what they would do is pull me up the steps on a bus, or we would either walk to school.
Oh my gosh.
And basically that's how I got to school every day. He would walk
Wow.
with me to school every day. Yes.
That's crazy. And that's how it was. No one even thought anything about it. So, wow. And so, did you graduate on time? And I mean, what was it like going back in a wheelchair, though? That's the hard part, isn't it?
Yes, that was the hard part.
Yeah.
What was fortunate, my teacher, Miss Walsh, she ended up bringing my lessons to the hospital because I ended up being in the hospital for 9 months because both of my lungs collapsed.
Oh my God.
So she would bring my lessons into the hospital. So I
Okay.
ended up graduating in my 8th grade, junior high school. I ended up graduating with my class.
Cool.
And coming back to school, all the kids, kind of welcomed me back. The only challenge was there was no elevator in the school. So all the students would carry each piece of the wheelchair, two in the front, two in the back. And that's how I went to class every day. And then at lunchtime, if it rained, they would send somebody outside to get my lunch and bring my lunch upstairs. And they would sit in a class with me and eat lunch with me, which I thought was like, to this day, it just touches my heart that they were so supportive.
Some really nice kids. Are you friends with any of those people till this day?
I'm actually friends with all of them today.
Oh, that's really, really freaking cool, man. I love it. You always hear about like negative high school experiences after a paralysis. So that's a good experience to hear about, even in all those years ago. So, okay. So I know you've done a lot of career stuff in your career. And so I'm imagining, did you, after high school, did you go to college? What was your plans after high school?
So when I graduated from Cardinal Hayes High School, I ended up going to John Jay College, where I studied criminal law. I actually wanted to be a criminal lawyer. And in a couple of my mock trial cases, I just realized that would I be able to sleep at night if I beat some of these cases? Because being a criminal lawyer and defending some of these cases where I know the person is guilty,
Yeah.
it was just a little challenging for me. And to, So it was something that I ended up switching up on, and I went back to Adelphi University and got a paralegal certificate and started studying corporate law.
Okay. So for anyone that doesn't understand that, what is how is that different then than regular?
Corporate and criminal.
Yeah, like are you was that like a when you paralegal, I mean, so you can do like what kind of jobs can you do with that kind of degree, I guess is my question.
With paralegal degree, you basically read legal cases and
Okay.
over the cases and prep the cases for the lawyers.
Cool.
So you're basically doing all the research for the legal cases.
All right. And so was that your career for a while or?
Yes, that was my career for a little while, and then I got more into like the budget and the finance pieces of the cases, forecasting the expenses and things like that.
And so was this all done in the office? Like you were getting up every day going to work, right?
Yes, so I also drive, and I have a disability parking permit that allows me to park anywhere on the street in New York.
No
So,
way. Hold on. That's a thing. You can get that.
yes, it's called the on the street parking disability permit.
Cool. That sounds awesome. How much did the cost?
It's actually free for people with disabilities. So
Oh,
you don't
that's
have to pay the parking meters. You don't have to pay, you can park anywhere except a bus stop. It has a couple of restrictions, like a bus stop, a taxi stand, of course, a fire hydrant, and certain no standing zones.
yeah.
But for the most part, it allows me to park in most of the places around my job,
That's
which,
beautiful.
yes.
You know, a lot of cities don't offer that, and that's pretty cool. I know it's expensive out there too, which we can talk about that, but we're not gonna.
Definitely.
But yeah, so so that's great. You know, I don't know what to start with. So can you just tell me how you, real estate, how did you make the transition? I know you worked in real estate as well, right?
Yes, actually, one of my friends was a real estate broker, Kim Parker, and she introduced real estate to me. She said, "Jeff, you know a lot of people. You're a real outgoing person. You have a great personality. I think you would be great in real estate." So I started studying real estate. I ended up getting my real estate license, and then I had my real estate license for 4 or 5 years working under her. And then I
Okay.
started working in the Bronx over by Yankee Stadium, and
Oh.
I ended up getting a contract with a building over there at 675 Walton Avenue. So I was the main agent for that particular building.
Cool.
And it was real interesting because a lot of times when my clients would come to see the apartments and there was a doorman there, they would ask the doorman, "I'm waiting for Jeff Williams." And I'd be sitting there in a wheelchair and he's the broker, I'm waiting for him to come show me an apartment. And the doorman would always laugh because he said, "Jeff, they always come and ask for you and you sitting right here." So I said, "I am Jeff Williams." And then it's just the facial expressions, the different things that, some of them were really brutally honest and said, "I'm sorry. I just really didn't expect to see somebody in a wheelchair, doing real estate." But those are like happy moments for me because it goes to show you that at that moment, I'm breaking the stereotype of the
You're
things we
right.
think that we can't do. So,
I
some
love
people
it.
look at it negative. I look at it as positive because those are our moments where we get to teach, where we
Yes.
become inclusive and teach people how to become more inclusive.
Seeing someone like you is so powerful when you're out and about doing your thing. Like when I was newly injured, I saw a woman who was a quad who was a reporter for CBS News, and I was like, oh my God, that is so inspiring. So I, you know, even if someone was able-bodied, it's like, whoa, I bet you still inspire. I bet people were probably impressed, even if they didn't say anything. I bet they were. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool. So
And
when
what
you
a
did you have to make sure you showed only properties you could get into, or did you ever like have someone do it for you since you couldn't get in, or how did you manage that?
I'm glad you asked that question. That's a great question. One of the things in New York, they have like private houses. So there's like a lot of steps to get up into these private houses. So sometimes what I would do is have my son come with me and he would carry me up the stairs. I get back in a wheelchair and I'm already up in the apartment, in the house when they get there. And then there was times where if there was a situation where I couldn't actually go upstairs, then I would have one of my mentees. I have a person, Mike Marcus, who I mentored to do real estate, and I would take him and have him do the showing
Love
for
it.
me. And I would just dictate it from downstairs. And like sometimes I would just need to go up there to take pictures.
You're
So I
right.
would get somebody to actually just take the pictures for me, and then I don't have to go upstairs. But I like navigating those challenges just to show people that I show up regardless of the steps and just to break down some more barriers of things that don't count us out, include us no matter what the situation or the obstacle is.
I love it. We do a lot of disability employment interviews for our site, and I don't think I've talked to too many real estate agents, but there are a few of you guys out there. There's a couple in Florida that I know of that are quads doing real estate, but I don't know. I think it's great. I love it. Have you ever specialized in accessible housing ever, or was that something that's not very needed, I guess?
I have been specialized in it. I think in New York, there are still like a lot of barriers in that area because even for myself as a real estate broker, that I'm a broker now, it's hard for me to find an accessible apartment where I don't have to make adjustments to the doors, to the entrances, and even when you get the accessible building, then you run into the doorway for the bathroom is not wide enough. What's in the hallway is not wide enough, things like that.
Man, I know. I've lived in two condos, and I've had to renovate both of them. And it's always something. You never find the perfect space, but that's so cool. So are you currently doing that still?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So I currently do that. And the other thing I love about the real estate, like even when it's a day that it snows, I still show up for my appointments. And to be there in a snowstorm and have some of my clients call and say, "Oh, I can't make it because of the weather." It's just one of those things that tap me on the shoulder and say, "Jeff, you're doing a great job. You still show up when people think you shouldn't show up."
Where did you get this strength from? Because I know a lot of people, man, they struggle when it comes to energy, getting up and going in life, you know. Do you have
From
any, what do you count it for you?
the time I had my injury, my mother and my family, they have always pushed me. They have always giving me that tough love that you have to start doing everything that you can possibly do on your own, be as independent as possible so you don't have to need people for certain things. With some things that we definitely will need assistance with or accommodations in another way so we can get the job done. But she always instilled that in me from day one. So I think that tough love is really what gives me this drive and this motivation and deep inside of me. Because I understand the world is not accessible and everybody has different levels of injury. I just feel like I want to be that person and that role model to open these doors, to break down these stereotypes. So even when I decide I'm tired, I don't really want to do it today, I think about all the other people that I'm doing this for. It's not just for me, it's for everybody in a wheelchair, everybody that has a disability, everybody that's counted out and not included. So for that reason, that keeps me motivated to bring any challenge and break that door down.
It's pretty awesome, you know, to take that road after an injury. Some people take the dark more down the dumps road after an injury, and some people never really get out of it. And that's really one of the saddest things. You know, I've seen so many people struggle with their mental health, and you try to give advice, and that's like kind of what I want to talk about your book, because I think your book is going to really help a lot of people, if not already. And let's talk about it. My feet are off the ground,
Yes.
right? Journey from tragedy to triumph. Look at
Yes.
that. Yes. I like the photo. So when was
So
it published? When did it come out?
in 2021, and I also did it in Spanish. So the book came out in 2021 during COVID. And because I'm so outgoing and I really do a lot of different things outside of the house, being confined during COVID kind of brought me back to when I had my injury when I was confined to a hospital bed and stuck in a hospital for 9 months. And I figured I'm not going to waste this time. How can I use this time to do something really creative? And I always would go out and speak to different people who were recently injured just to not only tell them that they can be okay, but to show them that you still can live after the injury.
Was it through a peer mentor program, or how did you get involved in
A
finding?
lot of those situations wasn't through programs. It was mostly like just people that saw me out in the street, saw me out and about, saw me go to work. They would just come up to me and say, I have a son or I have a family member who's been injured. I just wanted to know, like it's been times I've gone to hospitals where I've never met the person. Their family is like blown away, like this is the first time I've seen this person smile. And I try to explain to the family that when I roll in the room to another wheelchair user, we already understand some of what we're dealing with and the challenges that it come with, mentally and physically. And, everybody, I just try to explain to them that everybody's steps coming out of darkness is different. So
It's
it's not
hard.
like, you can't just see me do something and say, okay, tomorrow he's going to do it too. So, everybody has to take those steps, at their own pace. You know, I tell people it's like a marathon. We all gonna cross that finish line, but at different times.
Man, when you grow into those rooms, they're kind of dark, kind of sad spaces. What are some of the things that you like to say to individuals when you do go into their rooms?
When I was actually in that dark space when I first had my injury and being in the hospital ward at 13 years old and seeing other children that was younger than me dealing with these situations. I always tell people when you think you have it bad, somebody else has it worse, which is
True.
what this 7-year-old said to me when I first got injured. And I was crying every day about my injury and I can't walk and things like that. And what she did for me, it showed me that stop focusing on what you can't do and focus on what you can do. And that was one of the things that helped me through my injury. So now my motto is, I'm never saying I can't do something. I always say, how can I do it? Based on resources that I have left.
How can I do it? So your title, My Feet Are Off the Ground, is that just a reference to you rolling?
I named that title My Feet Off the Ground because I also fly airplanes that's on the back of
Okay, now
the
you fly airplanes too. Gosh, wow, look at that. When did you get your pilot's license? Oh my gosh.
I don't actually have the pilot license. I kind of just dived in and they let me fly the plane.
You take lessons once in a while, right?
Yes. So I also do water skiing, where I have a boat pull me on the water skis. So they have an adaptive water ski that anybody can actually do it. It's just having the heart and the courage. And it was something else that I felt like if I do this and I show the world I can do this, other people will try it, which will, kind of get them out of those dark places to kind of have fun with their life and their new situation.
Man,
And I also do rock climbing. I ride four-wheelers, motorcycles. I have a custom three-wheel motorcycle.
you do? Oh man, what kind of cycle is that then?
It's called the Polaris Slingshot,
You
the
have a
three.
slingshot? No way. Oh, I
Yes.
know the slingshot. I you see them all around
I
in cities,
controlled on that. Yeah. So I
Wow.
love all these things. And what's really big for me is when I actually drive one of these vehicles that's not expected and I pull that wheelchair out or they see the wheelchair beside me and they're like, how in the world is he doing this?
That's what you should bring is the slingshot into the rehab center. Just bring the slingshot in. That'll impress the people in the hospital
Exactly.
rooms.
Definitely.
Don't worry, your life is not gonna be boring, okay? Like there's adventures to be had. And I think that is this is such a great thing to go into these people's rooms. I've done some peer support, but not at all what you've been doing, man. It's so cool. So did you start doing it in your 20s, your 30s? Like what age did you decide to start helping other people? It was right away.
I actually started it right away because I remember when I was in the hospital, it was this guy who would come to the hospital to visit, and I would see him put the leg brace on and go down the parallel bars. And, I would go with him. I would actually go to therapy just to watch him. Even though he never realized how much he inspired me and the things that he was doing that I thought wasn't even possible because it was all new to me. But seeing him actually do it just gave me more drive, more motivation. So I said, even for the people that don't see me, even for the people that, I mean, not see me, but don't know me, you're always inspiring somebody. And we all inspire people because it's other people that come down the same road, down the same journey. And I just want to make people believe that it can actually be done.
Have you ever encountered anyone in a wheelchair or was paralyzed that just is you can't help them? Like they're just at a point where they're just too negative or
I have met a lot of those people. I haven't given up on them, so I still reach out to them. I still try to tap into them and just try to get them to think differently, try to change their mindset. There's really no one that I feel like, I just think they're at a point where they haven't transitioned into the reality yet because they're stuck in the past and stuck into the things that they used to do. And I try to change that momentum by saying, look, these are the things that you can do. What I love is one by one, I always have one of them come back to me and say, Jeff, I made it. I'm doing this now, I'm doing that. And they really just the smile on their face, to
that's
feel how
great.
proud they are through our conversation of where I started with them and where I end up with them. And they all have been success stories. So There hasn't, I haven't encountered anyone that I left behind or I couldn't transform them to see the light in order for them to move forward.
Do you believe, like, in, I mean, how, what's your opinion on therapy, mental, medication, all that? Do you go for it if needed, or what do you?
I've never had mental therapy, and I never had really took medication. I don't really take a lot of medication, but I think when I look back, I always often wonder, like, should I have went and got help? Should I went to see somebody for the situation for the trauma? The fortunate part, I think, I had so many people around me when the injury first happened, and I have a big family,
Yeah,
and my
you're lucky.
friends responded in a way that embraced me, where they always included me. I mean, even before inclusion became a big thing, I've always been included. When they went roller skating, they would make me go. In the beginning, I felt a little uncomfortable. I
You
felt a
rolled
little
out there? Yes, nice.
they even made me get the skates. So I started embracing these things and looking at it from a different perspective. So I think a lot of times we feel like, why would I go roller skating when I can't skate? But it's not the fact that you can't skate. The fact is you're included. And then I even put the skates on, and they would push me around the rink in my chair. And they was happy to have me there, so they didn't have to exclude me places that they went. And it's like when you married or whatever, you say to your husband, I want to watch the baseball game, and you like, I hate baseball. I don't even know what's going on. But you have to negotiate sometimes to do what other people can do. And then it becomes, y'all become closer because you learn the game, and now he has somebody that he can talk to about.
So in your book, can you kind of explain about like the section, not exactly the sections because we don't want to go through it. That's kind of boring, but like what are like the main kind of like what do you, is it your story? Like, are you speaking your story or what can you get? What do you expect when you open up your book? What, you know
The
what I mean?
biggest thing of my book to me is the fact that it's a chapter on forgiveness. And that has resonated with me the strongest, I mean, the most, because the person who shot me, I actually forgave him. And I think forgiveness is probably one of the hardest things for people to do, because I see people who can't forgive family members for things that's so much smaller than that.
Oh,
And
it's hard sometimes, yeah.
yes, and then to live with a disability and an injury to the level that I was injured, and to be able to forgive that person. And when I say forgiveness, I mean truly forgive them, where we share Thanksgiving together with my family. He comes to dinner with my
Oh.
family. Everybody has forgiven him. So, me and him are like best friends, the true meaning of best friends. So that to me
Did
in
you have
that
to talk a lot though? Did you and him have like a powwow session where you talked it out?
We only talked about this injury again when I did this book, because the New York Times did a story on it and they wanted to interview both of us. So that's the only time me and him ever talked about this situation. I forgave him when it happened. I never really held it against him, and I never really talked to him about it. He showed me through daily, he was sorry and things like that. And I understood the burden that he had to carry, even though I was the one injured, to be the person who did it. I mean, it comes up in every motivational speech that I do at a school or any event, because I always end up having to separate the room, who would forgive their friend and who wouldn't.
Wow, cool.
Yes.
So
But
what is it? How does it end up? Are there more forgivers or let not are not enough
almost
forgivers?
90% of that room said, I will not forgive him, right? So what I do after I get that response is have the person who's the loudest on not forgiven and switch the role. And I said, so now you shoot your friend, would you want your friend to forgive you? Just so I can change the mindset and put them in a different position. And that's how I get control of the room again, to kind of engage people to learn this process of forgiveness. Because I think even for people like we talked about struggling with the mental side of having a disability or becoming disabled, part of that struggle is people can't forgive themselves, and they can't forgive the person who actually created the accident if it was like somebody else was driving the car, things like that. So I feel like they carry this burden, and the burden is so heavy, they're not allowed to move forward to have a positive and successful life.
That's great. You know, not enough people talk about that when it comes to being able to move forward after a spinal cord injury. Just the forgiveness is really, I think, a huge thing. Because for me, you know, you get angry at your own life decisions, or you get angry at, like you said, other people, but that can really hold you back in terms of being happy and just feeling
Right.
like you can not let it just weigh you down every day, I guess. It's hard to explain, but that's really huge. There was an episode of Cry for the Straight Guy on Netflix where this guy was also shot and he forgave the guy that shot him, and they showed it and it was crazy. And I think that it, sometimes it's one of those things where, you know, it's good for you because then you can heal,
Yes.
right? And you're not angry. I don't know.
And I remember being a child when there was this police officer. His name was Officer McDonald. And the young man who shot him, he was in jail. And Mr. McDonald went in his wheelchair to forgive him at the prison. And I thought that was like the most powerful thing I remember as a child being disabled, because I wondered at that moment, I was one of those people. How could you forgive him? And when it happened to me, and I was able to do the same thing, he was one of the reasons that inspired me to really want to be an example of who he was and what it meant to me to see him do that. And I feel like by me forgiving the person who did this to me, it will help other people do the same thing. And you kind of free up two lives, because it frees my life up and it frees his life up so he can become successful. And he did well in life, and I did well in life. And my brother, who was also at the accident, he did well in life. So I think by the way we responded to it, it helped all of us grow from the situation instead of it turning into another tragedy where we want revenge. And I think not forgiving people leads you to making bad decisions on revenge and things like that.
So cool. That's beautiful. I can't believe how you guys just managed to move forward. You don't hear that all the time. And you mentioned you had a son. We don't have a lot of
Yes.
time left, but I didn't know you had a kid. That's pretty cool because you were injured at 13. So can you tell me about that a little bit?
So I had my son when I was 30 years old, and I had him naturally, which was another miracle. I always call him the miracle in the chapter in the
That's
book. He's
amazing.
a miracle. And I know it's a challenge for a lot of people with spinal cord injuries to
Yes.
naturalize a child. I know even people without spinal cord injuries, having a child is something that's challenging. And I use that chapter to tap into, like, a lot of people, you know, people don't want to talk about sex and they don't want to talk about having sex with a disability. But because I know the challenges that come with it, it was a chapter in the book that was also important to me, because I wanted other people who are recently injured to know that you still can have a family, whether you do artificial insemination, whether you naturally can still have a child. But don't ever count any of these things out, because these are things people live for. These are things that people want in life, whether you're disabled or not. You want a family, and one day you want to be able to say, you know, what if I want a family? How does that work? What does that look like? How is it to be a father in a wheelchair? So that chapter was super important to me.
Love
So I
it.
ended up writing three books, because I made one book with that chapter in it and one book without it for, you know, people under 18 that they didn't really want exposure to what that process looks like.
You're right. That makes sense. You have a kid-friendly book, and then you have a book for the guys that are newly injured who think that's all
Absolutely.
over for
Right.
them. And
And
that's
being a
great.
man, you know, it's part of your manhood, and you want to be able to still perform. You still want to find a way to, you know, be intimate with a woman, you know, or whoever your partner is.
Men get who are paralyzed, that for them is one of the biggest things they worry about. And I know this from many forums that I've been on, and you see it over and over again. It's the number one, like for most men. I'm like, so
Yes.
that's really great. So
Explain
you
to
have one
people.
child then, one kid?
Yes, I have one son. He's 25 now. And I mean, it was a great experience being a father, and him just being proud of me as his dad and not really feeling uncomfortable. And you know, all his friends embrace me, and he's like, everybody want my father. He says, that's my father, and he's real protective of I'm his father, not everybody else's father. All his friends is like, I wish he was my dad. And you know, I go to the school meetings, all his school events I used to go to, and just having that relationship with him, and it's no different than somebody's walking. It's the same process. You have your ups and downs. You have to be a parent. It's all those same challenges that you face as a parent.
I love how fearless you are. So many people would be like, oh, I don't want to be the only parent in the wheelchair at the PTO meeting, or I don't want to be rolling up and embarrassing my kid in my wheelchair. I mean, I just love that you've managed to not let any of those like self-doubts kind of creep into your brain. You've done
Yes.
your life so cool, man. I love it.
And
And
it's
you're
really exciting. Like when I pick him up from school, sometimes I'll come in a motorcycle. And now you're thinking, well, Jeff's father's in a wheelchair and he's like that. I love when you come in a motorcycle.
Yes, I bet he does.
Say you're in a wheelchair. They say, I thought you said your father was in a wheelchair. He said he is.
He is. He is, and he's awesome, and he drives a motorcycle. Like, that's just also, you're helping change those kids' perspectives as well. You know, it's winning everywhere. I love it. I hope you post some videos of you in that slingshot on your social media. I want to see it.
Yes, it's definitely up there. Yes,
Oh, it
it's up
is?
there.
Okay. Gosh, no, unfortunately, we have to stop talking. The Zoom interview is going to make us end now, but I want you to quickly share, where can people find your book and stuff and find you?
So my book is on JeffreyLorenzoWilliams.com,
Okay.
and they can find me on my Instagram page, Shoes by Jay Lorenzo. So that's my sneaker line.
We don't have time to talk about that. We should have you back at some point to talk about that. That's
Absolutely.
also cool. Yeah.
And my email address is my feet are off the ground at yahoo.com. And
Beautiful.
anybody that's out there that needs some guidance, have any questions on how to, I can answer those questions. And if I can't answer them, I'll show you how.
No, I was going to ask you if they could reach out to you. That's really nice of you, because
Absolutely.
not
They can
everyone's in New York
email
City,
me.
you know?
They can
Yeah.
Zoom me. Whatever it takes to get them out of those dark places, I'm willing to help. If I have to show up wherever they are, I'm willing to go visit them. Whatever it takes for me to make them see that light is just who I am.
Yeah, life is too short, right? And you gotta embrace it. Even if you're in a wheelchair, you just can't let it go by. That's how I've felt all these years. So
My motto is I want my legacy to be when somebody Google me, it's not how much money I have, but how many lives I have changed.
ooh.
Yes.
I think that's great. I think we should end there. That's
That's it.
amazing. And I am so glad to have met you today. And like I said,
Thank
I'd love
you.
to have you back, okay? Because the shoes thing is right up my alley. I want to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well,
Thank you so
happy
much.
Easter.
Happy Easter. Thank you for
Okay.
having me.
Yep.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Jeffrey. Thank
Okay.
you
Bye-bye.
again.
Nice meeting you.
Bye. Thank you.